Welcome to another episode of the Neon Movie Bunker. I'm John Robinson.
And I'm Miller A. Stanek.
And we're here to talk about movies.
And Dead Sight.
Dead Sight, eh?
Yes, Dead Sight is coming out on DVD this week, and I had the chance to sit down with actor Adam Sabold to talk about it.
Really?
Yes, I did. I have proof, too.
Yeah, right.
No, I recorded the conversation with Adam's consent, of course, and I can provide it now for your listening enjoyment.
Yeah, right.
No, seriously, check this out.
Hi, Adam, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well. So, tell me, how did you get connected with Dead Sight?
I've known Jesse Cook, the director of Dead Sight, for quite a few years now, almost a decade, because he was one of the producers on a zombie movie that I did, directed by John Geddes, called Exit Humanity, which is a zombie movie set just after the American Civil War. And so over the years, I've worked on, I don't know, 4, 5, maybe 6, it's hard to tell these days, different projects with them. But I never worked with Jesse as in a film that he was directing. And so, because for whatever reason, we just never found the right fit. And so with this one, he had a movie, that he was making when Liv was going to play, because Liv at the time was super pregnant with their son, Hollis. And he said, it's going to be the zombie movie. Liv's going to be pregnant and a cop, and you're going to be blind. Do you mind shaving your head? We shoot in 3 weeks. And that was it. That was all the preamble I needed.
So it sounds to me like this part was in some ways kind of custom tailored to you, aside from, you know, needing to shave your head and being blind.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think when they initially conceived of the idea of a blind guy in the midst of a visually impaired person in the midst of a zombie outbreak, I think it was initially conceived as something slightly more comedic. But then I think, you know, once I came on board and once, Liv and I started acting together, I think the tone of the thing became a little more almost naturalistic, I guess is the word I would use, or contemplative. And it's just more playing the reality. And I think it just, that comes from the vulnerability. And so, a lot of the scripts we didn't rewrite it or improvise it. It was more just like sort of tailoring the beats for stuff that we could play together in terms of like our relationship and how we related to each other. And that sort of affected the tone as we went, when we sort of figured out, okay, this is the kind of story that we're telling here.
That makes sense. Well, and I'll be honest with you. I mean, I can see how some comedy could be juiced out of that concept, but it's also pretty damn terrifying idea to be visually impaired in that sort of situation.
Yeah, exactly. I think that, like, it's one of those things where, you know, you're taking two of the most, and, you know, we shot this movie before A Quiet Place came out. And so the idea of a woman who, you know, is about to have a baby in this sort of dystopian landscape is sort of this really cool ticking time bomb that is underneath the film the entire time, in terms of the vulnerability of the mother and then of the baby being born into that world. That makes it, and then if you add like her only means of defense in the situation is a guy who recently lost his sight, like that's all, like I feel like that sort of twist on the genre hasn't really been done before.
And yet it's tapping into ideas that a lot of, because you mentioned A Quiet Place, which also has, you know, the pregnant woman in a dystopia.
Yeah.
But there seems to be a lot of genre fiction kind of tapping into these ideas of vulnerability and what that vulnerability means in these sorts of situations. It's an interesting concept to explore.
Yeah. And I think that because, I mean, there's two reasons why. I mean, like, because of the plethora of examples of zombie movies and plague movies that we already have are already out there. And so audiences are pretty savvy, and especially horror audiences, I find, are super smart. you know, they're, so you don't have to explain a lot because they're like, yeah, we get it. We've, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, you're not going to sneak up on them in any way. So then it's like, it's about twisting it in the way that's like, okay, well, how can we best tell this story? And I think in terms of that vulnerability, I think that just like where we are as a culture right now, there's a lot of people right now that sort of feel vulnerable to forces, and that we feel vulnerable to the state of the planet and the climate and all that kind of stuff. And all of that sort of subconscious stuff kind of, or that anxiety feeds movies like this.
Absolutely. So tell me a bit about how do you play somebody visually impaired? How do you approach that?
Well, I mean, really, it's just about, you know, I had some gauze pads on my eyes and then gauze bandages wrapped around that. And so that was kind of like my costume, as it were. And then underneath that, Sean Hunter, our special effects supervisor who designed, you know, who did all the excellent design of the zombies, he had these contact lenses that were kind of milky. So it, like, even if my eyes were seen, it's not just like my eyes are underneath there. And I normally wear contact lenses, so I basically couldn't see for most of the day while we were shooting. And you know, you just take for granted how much, or at least I did. I took for granted how much just being able to see perfectly is connected to my mood. And so I would get just kind of grumpy and frustrated by the day and the conditions and the elements. But a lot of that is just in not being able to see and not being in control of something. And then at a certain point, it becomes freeing because you just sort of give yourself over to the situation and you give yourself over to the director and your cinematographer. So Jeff and Jesse, it was just like, I was just dependent on them to say like, okay, you tell me when I'm full of shit. That's all. Like, I'm just going to trust you and not control it and just play the kind of moment to moment reality, which is the basics of what acting is. But it's very easy. I have a tendency to because I'm a writer, I think I have a tendency to like overthink things. And so it was actually kind of freeing in this way. But you know, on the way to that freedom, there was some grumpiness for sure.
How long of a shoot was it?
Well, we shot, the initial shoot was, I want to say 10 days, maybe 12 days. So it wasn't much at all, but it happened to coincide with a really, and so we had, you know, establishing shots early, in the shoot where there's no snow that then you can't match by the end of the shoot. So then we had to come back and shoot probably another 5 days or so on the other side of that. In May. So we kind of had to wait until the snow went away and like, so that the exteriors would match. And so we were kind of, so we did, you know, a chunk of it at the beginning of the winter and then a chunk of it right at the end.
What else have you got coming down the pike? What's next on the agenda for you?
Well, like I said, I'm a writer by trade, and so there's a bunch of projects and a bunch of features that I'm working on right now for some companies here in and around Toronto that I'm really excited about. I can't say a lot about them, but none of them are horror movies, but they're all kind of genre movies of their own, whether it's a thriller or a mystery or a kind of, you know, environmental thriller. So there's a few different things that, you know, hopefully there's a couple of things, three things that I'll be shooting hopefully later on this year that'll sort of come out in the next year. So I'm pretty excited about those.
Let me ask you this, as a writer, how do you find what's the distinction for you between thriller, horror, and mystery? Because there's so much overlap between those three.
Well, I think at the end of the day, it's all just story. I mean, you're working within, to me, I like working within genres because there's a kind of form and a structure that is kind of laid out for you. But within that, the genre, and I think we're finding now in the culture that genre films like horror movies or mysteries or thrillers can also hold like cool and evocative social ideas and commentary about where we are right now. But I think that what we're finding now in, 2019 and as film kind of keeps going, is like there's a lot of blurring of the lines between genres. And so something that is a horror movie can also be, somebody like Jordan Peele's out here writing, really great, scary movies that are also hilarious at the same time. And you find that the comedy is heightened by the fright, and then the scares are heightened by the comedy. And it's like, but that goes all the way back to like Shakespeare, where you could have tones coexisting at the same time while you're also saying something evocative and cool and insightful about the world that we currently inhabit in terms of like how we relate to each other. So for me, it's just all, at the end of the day, it's all just story. And the cool thing about film in 2019 is that you can kind of throw everything in there, and that audiences are really smart, really savvy, and really ready for it.
There definitely seems to be more of a desire for that sort of thing now.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you see it like in food, you know what I mean? Where you'll have like, you're taking kind of two things that maybe don't go together, but then they become this other thing that you wouldn't think, oh, okay, well, this food and this food, or this cuisine and this cuisine. It's like all these lines or these boundaries or lines of demarcation are kind of going away.
I personally, I'm all in favor of that.
Yeah, me too.
Tell me, having been in a zombie film before, is that a genre or a subgenre that you really enjoy, a type of dystopia that you're a fan of?
Well, I would say that before I made my first zombie movie, which was Exit Humanity, I had never even seen a zombie movie before. I hadn't seen Night of the Living Dead. I hadn't seen, and I'm from the Pittsburgh area, so like George Romero, he's like,
local hero, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And for some reason, it was just like a gap in my culture somehow. And so it wasn't until I worked on my first zombie movie. And I think, it also coincides with the proliferation of horror movies over the last kind of 10 years, as like more and more people have been able to make movies. A movie like this, if you were making a drama, let's say, like a kitchen sink drama about, a visually impaired man who's lost his family and a cop who's about to have a baby, it wouldn't star Liv and I, you know what I mean? Like you would have to find a movie star to be able to make it and to sell it, or two movie stars, I should say. Whereas, mm-hmm. With a zombie movie, it's like the zombies are the star of the movie. They kind of sell and are marketable everywhere. And so I find, working on them, first of all, I find them really fun because, especially now that I have my son is 6 years old, so he just loves it. He loves the idea that I'm working with zombies, and he can kind of go to school and show pictures of his dad with zombies. So I've got cachet with my kid for, that buys me a couple of years of coolness. But then also, I just really have enjoyed the process of making them because, again, it's like, anytime you're telling a story about people on the edge of civilization, that's fertile dramatic territory.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. You too.
We'd like to thank Adam for his time.
And we'd like to thank all the fine folks at Katrina Waller PR for setting up the interview. And remember, Dead Sight is available on DVD this week.
Neat.
So, John?
Yes.
Let's say our listeners want to get in touch with us. Let's say, hypothetically, they want to tell us about their take on the bizarre twist ending of Ma.
Okay.
How would they get in touch with us?
Well, there's our email address, mail@neonmoviebunker.com.
Which is a good way to get in touch with us, but not the only way to get in touch with us. What else is there?
There's facebook.com/neonmoviebunker.
That is also good, but again, I'm greedy. Give me more.
twitter.com/neonmoviebunker or @neonmoviebunker or @johnnmb.
Or @LRANeonMB.
Is that enough for you?
Is anything ever enough for me?
No.
No, it really isn't. But that'll do for now. That'll do, John. That'll do. What about...
Oh, you're getting a shoe beaten.
What about a website where they could find all of our programming and trailers and things?
Oh, you're talking about www.neonmoviebunker.com?
Yes, I am. I'm also curious as to what else they could do.
Well, if they were so inclined, they could subscribe to the show.
Ooh.
Through Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify or really wherever you get your podcasts.
So many different options.
Yes. They abound.
Mm-hmm. So, John?
Yes.
We've got all sorts of fun to cover this week.
Yes, we do.
We've already had our interview.
Yes, we have.
And we've got some interviews or some reviews we're going to do.
Yeah.
And then after the reviews...
It's the half-year show.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost as good as the year-end show, but not quite.
It's about half as good.
About half as good, yeah. John?
Yes.
You saw a movie.
I did.
Please, tell us about it.
I saw Yesterday. Directed by Danny Boyle. Screenplay by Richard Curtis. From a story by Jack Barth and Richard Curtis. Stars Himesh Patel, Lily James, Kate McKinnon, Joel Fry, and others.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, others. A cast of literally dozens.
Wow.
It's the story of Jack Malik, who is a rock singer-songwriter in Suffolk in England in 2019.
Okay.
And he's riding home from what he's probably going to be his last gig before he packs it in and goes back to teaching full time instead of, you know, doing the gigs part time and working at a warehouse store part time. He's on his way back from one of those gigs, having been dropped off by his manager slash longtime friend, Ellie.
Hmm.
When all of a sudden the lights go out worldwide, power outage, nothing. Boom, blackout completely. Okay. It makes an interesting visual contrast with the Universal Studios logo that comes up at the beginning of the movie.
Wow.
Okay. Because it plays almost exactly like that in reverse because they show the scene of the lights going out globally.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then they cut around to New York and Tokyo and, you know, they show news broadcasts and the lights go out for 2 minutes. And during these 2 minutes, Jack, riding on his bicycle on his way home from the gig, gets hit by a bus.
Ouch.
Yes, he loses 2 front teeth, goes...
Well, now we know what he wants for Christmas.
If only.
Yeah.
And when he wakes up, he and his friends, including Ellie, have got... When he gets out of the hospital, he and his friends have gotten him a new guitar.
Oh, that's nice.
So, they're sitting around. He says, hey, play us something, Jack. All right. Great guitar, calls for a great song. Strums out a couple of chords and starts playing Yesterday by the Beatles.
Good song.
Very good song.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. Jack's friends?
Yeah.
Have never heard of it before.
Uncultured swine?
Well, you'd think so, but they've never heard of anything by the Beatles.
Uncultured swine?
So he goes to Google and types in the Beatles and gets back Volkswagens and those insects.
Cool. Yeah, all right. Those are all good examples of Beatles.
What he does not get are John, Paul, George, and Ringo. You see...
Uncultured search engine?
You see, something happened while the lights were out and all record of the Beatles has ceased to exist. The Rolling Stones are still there.
No, that's good.
The Who's still around.
Okay. Dr. Pepper?
Dr. Pepper, yes.
Good.
Sergeant Pepper, no.
Ah, well.
Although you're actually onto something.
I know.
Did you see this?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
But I know things.
You know things. Yeah, there are a couple of other glaring omissions that have seem to have disappeared in Blackout as well, but those are ancillary.
Hmm.
When Jack realizes what he's sitting on, this trove of songs that pretty good, most of them.
Yeah.
He decided it's not going to be his last gig. He starts performing around and starts performing some of these songs, and he catches the ear of a record producer.
Gotcha.
Who, you know, a small-time guy. He's got his own studio basically in his, you know...
closet.
Basically in his bedroom closet, yeah.
Yeah.
And he records, let's see, I Want to Hold Your Hand, and okay. She Loves You, and Let It Be, and Yesterday, and one other one on a 5-track EP that, you know, doesn't expect much to happen with until it somehow ends up in the hands of Ed Sheeran.
Well, then.
Who hears them and is quite impressed, and is, in fact, in search of a support act for a tour.
Okay.
So Jack suddenly finds himself sucked into the whirlwind of that, and his first gig is in Moscow. He plays back in the USSR.
Of course.
Yes. Well, things escalate from there. He meets Ed's manager, who becomes his manager.
Mm.
And snowball, 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 until the point where he's playing Wembley Stadium.
Wow.
Yes. In the meantime...
Meanwhile.
Ellie, his manager slash longtime friend, is back in Suffolk teaching school and wondering how she, as she puts it, how I ended up in the friend column and never in the lover column.
Ah.
Yes. And of course, as Jack's star is rising, it becomes even more and more implausible, and the possibility of a relationship,
right? No, becomes difficult. The logistics are distance becomes an issue.
Yes, I wanted to dislike this movie,
and why?
Because the world does not need more baby boomer cultural hegemony.
Fair enough.
It does not need more of this, you know, this music that came out in the 60s was the greatest thing ever, and no one can ever hope to match it.
Well, I mean, Beatles were pretty darn good.
Yeah, they were. But it takes a certain kind of
myopia to think that they are the be-all and end-all of pop culture.
Yeah, exactly.
I gotcha.
You know, the movie's well-made and well-performed.
Mm-hmm.
But the stuff with the you know, relationship with Ellie is seemingly kind of shoehorned in. There's a more interesting story to be told with this premise.
Yeah.
But this chooses to keep going back to the relationship between two people.
Gotcha.
Kate McKinnon as Jack's manager is differently amusing than she's been in other roles.
Okay.
Amusing, certainly.
Of course. It's Kate McKinnon.
But it's a different kind of wavelength from things like Ghostbusters and Office Christmas Party.
Right.
She's very kind of just perched on the edge of being incredibly sinister.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I wanted to dislike this movie, and in a different mindset.
Yeah.
I probably would have.
Okay.
But I was feeling generous when I saw it, I guess.
And it won you over?
Kind of in spite of myself, yeah. I mean, it's not great. It's not the best thing Danny Boyle's done. It's not the best thing Danny Boyle's done in the last 5 years. But a lot of people are going to see this and be very, very angry. I mean, just reading Twitter over the past few days.
Really?
There are a lot of angry people about this.
Why? Out of curiosity.
The boomer cultural hegemony thing again.
Gotcha. Okay. Fair enough.
It's okay. It's not going to be remembered very... It's
It's one blackout from never being thought of again?
Pretty much, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, it's fine.
It is passable.
Yeah. You know, it's solid B-minus work.
Okay.
But Yesterday in theaters now, if you are a Beatles-addicted baby boomer, then you've probably already seen it. If mm-hmm. not, definitely you should go. If you have any kind of affection for the work of the Beatles,
yeah,
maybe you'll like it.
Okay.
If you're under 55.
Mm-hmm.
But on the whole,
this is a skippable one.
It's not actually bad, but it's definitely just skippable.
Just a mediocre love story with a bizarre sci-fi premise.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
So that's Yesterday in theaters now.
Ah, my turn. Coming out this Wednesday from writer-director Ari Aster is Midsommar.
Yes.
Starring Florence Pugh, Jack Rayner, William Jackson Harper, Wilhelm Blomgren, and Will Poulter. Danny, played by Florence Pugh, is dealing with her very dramatic and currently agitated bipolar sister, desperately trying to calm her down and at the same time reach her parents so that they can get involved in the process, help calm her down, get things back to stasis so that the sister is not a threat to herself.
Okay.
As she is failing at getting in touch with the parents and failing at calming down her sister, she's constantly texting and talking with her boyfriend, Christian, who is out with his buddies.
Okay.
All of them, Christian, Danny, their friends, they're all college students working towards their master's degrees in the similar fields, mostly dealing with anthropology. There is one psychology major there.
Okay. So it's a bunch of brainiacs.
This does become relevant to the plot later on.
Okay.
Christian isn't certain that he wants to keep dating Danny. Danny feels like she's a drain on Christian, and Christian doesn't entirely disagree.
Hmm.
But when the police contact her to confirm that her sister and parents are dead in a murder-suicide, she runs to Christian for support, and he, of course, steps up, provides that support. We flash forward a few months, and the event has definitely taken a lot out of Danny. She is just...
As it would.
Right. Notably defeated. She hasn't been going to class. She's not up on her studies. She's withdrawing from social activities. Christian says, hey, let's go to this party that the guys are throwing. It'll get you out of the house, maybe get you to, you know, distract you for a little bit. Just something to get you moving. Okay. She's like, I don't know. He's like, well, I'm going to go. We're going to be right down the hall. Stop by anytime you want.
Okay.
She does, and learns that he is planning on going on a bit of a field trip with his friends to Sweden.
Ah.
You see, one of the members of the group, his name is Pelle. His family lives out in Sweden in this small little community. And they're going to be celebrating their Midsommar Festival soon.
Okay.
Which they only do once every 90 years in this particular style. And the guys are going to go, one of whom, Josh, is going to study it for his thesis.
Okay.
As they arrive, well, I'm jumping ahead because, quite honestly, all of this is set up.
Yes.
They all go.
Okay.
And once they arrive, they are encouraged to join in the rituals. The results are not good.
Uh-oh.
Well, depending upon who you ask. One thing that I'm going to get a couple of things out of the way right off the bat.
All right.
This is not Hereditary. Hereditary was built on secrets.
Okay.
Midsommar is not holding any secrets from you.
Okay.
It's not like this community has any intention of hiding who or what they are. This is their culture. They're celebrating it. They're proud to celebrate it. And they're happy to have you there to help them celebrate it.
Okay.
Also, part two of This Is Not Hereditary, this movie's really funny at times.
Hmm.
Like, intentionally funny. However,
yes,
this is one of the most uncomfortable movies to watch that you will see in a theater this year.
Oh, wow.
There is the life cycle of a member of this community.
Mm-hmm.
And the first 18 years is spring, and you're growing, and you're becoming the person that you're going to be. Then the next 18 years is summer, and you celebrate life, and you explore, and you learn. The next 18 years is fall, and you spend that time teaching, but primarily working in the community, trying to build things, take care of the farm, the animals, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final 18 years, bringing us to 72.
Is winter.
Where you are a mentor and, you know, you kind of sort of lead the community, but you're primarily helping, you're teaching, helping guide the young ones, and then you hit your 72nd year.
Yes.
There is nobody older than 72 in the community.
Hmm.
So.
Which makes it very interesting that it's operating on a 90-year cycle.
Yeah. Funny how that works.
Not ha-ha funny.
No, not ha-ha funny. This is not one of the jokes in the movie. This movie is, from a technical standpoint, this is a brilliantly constructed movie. It is absolutely gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that is on screen is there intentionally. There is, like I said, there is nothing being actively hidden, except for so much information is being presented to you right away that you're going to miss things.
Hmm.
Like, I know, talking with somebody else who saw it, there was something that they pointed out in the trees that I didn't see.
Hmm.
However, I was able to point out to them something in the flowers that they didn't see. And it's so many layers of straight-on visual assault to the audience with no barrier. There's no darkness hiding anything that's happening here. And there is some violence that happens. There's no masks. It's not like any character is hiding who's doing this. You're allowed to get to know these people, and then these things start happening. And these are very, very nasty, nasty things. We're talking Eli Roth level nasty. Now, there are a lot of people who are saying, there are a lot of my contemporaries who've seen this and are saying that this is an incredibly violent movie. I would disagree. I would say that it does have a scene or two of extreme violence.
Okay.
And whereas it could be said to be gratuitous how long it lingers on the results of that violence, I don't know that I agree that it's gratuitous as much as it is just, unlike most horror movies, we're not getting the rapid cut shock value. We're getting the, okay, here it is. We're going to set it on the table in front of you.
And you're going to sit with it for a while.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to sit with it for a while, and you're going to have to deal with what is on the table and understand it before we move on. You ready? No? Okay. Here it is. Oh, wait, it's still moving. What's back? Okay, now we'll move on.
Hmm. Can I ask a quick two-word question?
Yeah.
Wicker Man?
There is definitely a lot of Wicker Man to this. That's, again, something that's not exactly hidden. It's pretty clearly borrowing from Wicker Man. There's something in Wicker Man and in Hereditary that is not in this, story-wise, which makes a world of difference in what the authorial intent is.
Hmm.
It's, like I said, it's not an easy watch, but it's a fascinating one. And it's a movie that really requires multiple. I don't have all the information on this that I want yet. I need to see this movie again before I can put forth a fully formed opinion of it. This is one that I'm going to be mulling over for a while. This is not a movie that you do like a shot. This is a sipping film. you keep this one going for a while and you come back to it and you're like, okay, okay. Because there are so many different avenues to approach the story from and what's presented to us from. You could approach it from the different cultures. You could approach it from the relationship basis. There's just a lot going on here. You know our good friend Emmanuel Noisette.
Yes.
E-Man's Movie Reviews.
Yes.
I talked with him at length after the screening. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, okay, I don't know who I'd recommend this movie to other than you. So let that be, dear listener, let that inform your decision when going to see Midsommar. It's not an easy thing to see, and it is definitely made for a horror audience that is looking for something really thick and deep with intent. It's incredibly well made, but it doesn't. Our producer just asked me if it reaches Human Centipede 2 levels of gross.
Well,
and it doesn't.
Okay,
it is. It's not that extreme. It's just that it's
what is
Human Centipede 3.
Yeah, well.
But
outside of the
Human
Tom
Centipede
6 oeuvre.
Don't start a challenge that you don't ask questions you don't want the answers to, John. Because
I'm not trying to. I'm not trying to challenge you.
No. I didn't say that. I'm just saying.
I'm sure there are. Yeah.
But this is an incredibly well-made movie. This is not just pop horror. This is the sort of thing that will eventually be talked about in the same sort of breath as The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Exorcist, and Psycho.
Wow.
I am willing to make that statement right now. It is a landmark film for Aster. I thought Hereditary was a phenomenal film. Scary as hell. This one might not have made me jump quite as much, but at the end, I had trouble getting up to leave because I was just like, whoa, what did I just see? And I wasn't the only one with that reaction in the theater.
All right. So listeners, did you see Yesterday or did you see Midsommar? Please let us know what you thought. mail@neonmoviebunker.com.
In fact, I would recommend seeing them as a double feature. Go see Yesterday and then follow it up with Midsommar and let us know what you...
I am actually seeing Midsommar as part of a double feature, but not with Yesterday.
Oh yeah? What are you going to see it with?
I'm seeing it as the front end of a Midsommar Spider-Man Far From Home double feature.
That sounds like a good idea. You're going to want something to kind of wipe the slate clean for a while. Because Midsommar's a hell of a thing.
And speaking of Midsommars.
Yes, here we are at the middle of the year. 2019 is halfway through. And as such, we're going to take a look at the best movies so far from the year.
Yes. We have our traditional coin marked on one side with the face of Ari Aster and the other side with the face of Wes Anderson.
Mm. Wes Anderson, the Ari Aster of family drama, and Ari Aster, the Wes Anderson of horror.
Yes. All right, I'm going first.
Go for it, my friend.
All right. Running down... I suppose we should say we're running down our list of the top five things that have come out so far in 2019.
Right. Casey Kasem style.
Yes. 5-1.
Mm-hmm.
Number five on my list is something I talked about recently.
Okay.
Toy Story 4.
Oh.
Comes in at number five on my list of the best things so far in 2019. Not as good as Toy Story 3, but what is? Very little.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely the weirdest Toy Story movie. And that's okay.
Okay.
Technically great. Will punch you in the gut.
All right.
Also, got some really great humor to it. Key and Peele as Ducky and Bunny.
Really looking forward to that, seeing that.
Yeah, it's quite an experience. Existential dread and body horror in the form of a children's cartoon.
That you've sold me, but.
And I've sold $58 million worth of people this weekend, so.
Hey, hey! My turn?
Yes.
Well, going back to February, a little film came out, a sequel to an unexpected hit, Happy Death Day. Happy Death Day to You takes the slasher movie and makes it into a bizarre sci-fi action-adventure romp. It's not... I mean, there's still plenty of... Tree dies a lot, still. But the main focus isn't necessarily on that as much as it is on the alternate timelines and the fun, trippy science fiction aspect of it. It's so nice to see something kind of... It could have just retreaded Happy Death Day. It could have just gone into a slight variation of it. But no, this is going in a completely different direction, and I really appreciate that, the creativity on display to do that, and just the fun with alternate versions of characters, which seems to be a theme this year. Just a highly entertaining bit of sci-fi fun.
All right. Number four on my list is a movie that one or two people have seen.
Yeah?
Avengers Endgame.
Huh. Coincidentally, I'm going to jump in and say this right now, is also number four on my list.
Ha!
That, I think, is where our lists will, the similarities will end.
I can basically guarantee that.
Yeah.
Because I know you haven't seen my one or three, and I don't think you saw my two. So,
I know you've seen my three through one, and I know that you do not care for at least one of them.
I know which one it is.
Yeah. But we're here talking about Avengers Endgame.
Yes, Avengers Endgame. You saw it. You, the listener, saw it.
Mm-hmm. Probably multiple times.
Yes. I'm half considering going to see it again tomorrow.
It is such a satisfying movie. It has...
I laughed. I cried.
I was deeply moved. There are so many plot threads to tie up.
Mm-hmm.
And yet still leave things open for life to continue within the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
And it balances being an actual ending with there being the potential for new life in the franchise.
Yeah. And it ties up so much, and it's still a functional film.
Yeah.
I mean, I really don't expect it to happen, but I'm going to be disappointed in January when Marcus and McFeely aren't nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay for this. Because that
would be a good place to honor this.
Yeah. Because it has to do so much heavy lifting for so long, and it pulls it off.
It not only does it pull it off, but it does it deftly. It does it with
Elan.
It doesn't light, you know, it's light on its feet.
Yes.
For a 3-hour film, It doesn't drag.
For a three-hour film, that's the culmination of a 22-film cycle.
Right.
It
doesn't drag. You don't really need to stop to bring people up to speed. It moves smoothly, fluidly, and is satisfying entertainment.
Yeah. So since that was your four, I'm going to go ahead with my three.
Yeah, please do.
My number three is another film that one or two people saw, and this time I'm not being sarcastic about that. Sure. I mean, one or two people saw Fall of the American Empire.
Okay.
From French-Canadian filmmaker Denis Arcand. The story of a... Schlemiel. No, Schlemiel.
Okay.
Schlemiel spills the soup. The Schlemazel gets the soup spilled on him.
Mm, okay.
That's the
Good to actually finally know that now.
Yeah. Who finds a giant sum of cash from a robbery gone wrong and uses it to turn his life around in all the wrong ways. This is a fun little piece of work from Arcand that it's really smart. It's got things to say. It's well made. It's funny. It's, you know, a little dark, and it's everything I'm looking for.
Okay. Coming in at number three, speaking of everything I'm looking for when I go to the movies, you know, I do enjoy comedies. It's just, I'm very particular, very, very particular about the comedies that I go to and that I enjoy. Mm-hmm. And one way usually to win me over with a comedy is to cast Bill Murray.
Mm-hmm.
You throw in some zombies, mm-hmm. or perhaps ghouls, as Adam Driver says, and you've got me pretty well set as a happy member of your audience. And such is the case with The Dead Don't Die, featuring Adam Driver, Bill Murray, Carol Kane, Chloe Sevigny.
Tilda Swinton,
yes. Tilda Swinton's pretty damn awesome in this. It is a light and funny look at the zombie apocalypse up until the point where it suddenly becomes a really dark look at the zombie apocalypse.
Yes.
And I was thrilled with it from stem to stern.
Okay. Number two on my list, talking about comedy,
mm-hmm.
Is a comedy that I think you'd enjoy if you got to it, but it's rapidly leaving theaters. And that's Olivia Wilde's Booksmart.
I want to see that.
Well, it's probably going to just better off waiting for home video at this point.
Yeah.
Which is a shame because it really deserved to do a lot better. The story of two high school seniors who are getting ready to graduate and realize that they have not had any fun in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids, they haven't had any fun because they've dedicated themselves to their studies and getting into good colleges.
Uh-huh.
And then they realize the kids who
didn't
still got into good colleges.
Yeah.
And so they try to, in one night, make up for 4 years of missed opportunities.
Oh, boy.
Yes. And the facile comparisons to Superbad.
Right.
This is deeper and stranger than that. And really, if you haven't seen Booksmart, go on already. Come on. Do it. Do it.
Come okay.
On. Do it.
All right. You speak of... Well, I spoke of a movie that I knew you didn't care for very much. And it comes in at number two on my list.
Is it two letters?
It is. It is Jordan Peele's Us. The story of Adelaide and her family as they deal with the Tethered invading their home and trying to take their place. A horror movie that leans very heavily on the Twilight Zone and pulls out of the 80s some symbolism for some ideas that are still rather prevalent and worth taking a look at. Like, how effective are the means that we're going through to try to make things better? Where do our cheap and inexpensive luxury goods come from? There's somebody paying the price for those. And Us, it kind of explores those ideas and does it with some really great effects work and some really terrifying performances.
My number one for the year is another movie that not a lot of people saw.
Okay.
And I don't care. Because I will stand on the mountaintop and shout for it.
Well, I mean, this is the perfect sort of thing to...
This is the mountaintop I'm choosing to stand on and
right,
shout.
Right.
The best thing I've seen so far this year is Mike Leigh's Peter Lou.
Oh, okay.
Just a great piece of work about... It sounds vaguely ridiculous when you say it. It's people making speeches about voting reform in 1820s England. But it's fascinating to see the way Leigh sets up the world where these people are living. It's a very grimy, very ground level look at the life of people in Manchester in that time. And it's, you go in expecting a history lesson, and what you get is a call to action.
Okay.
It's endlessly fascinating, really. I'm so glad I saw it. And luckily, thanks to the fact it was released by Amazon Studios, I'll be able to see it again soon.
Wonderful.
And, you know, it's 2.5 hours of speechifying, but it's
good speechifying.
Spellbinding.
Yeah. Before I give you my number one, I want to point out that Midsommar came out in July.
Yes.
So it does not qualify.
Ineligible.
What does qualify is Gaspar Noé's Climax, which, much like Midsommar, is not an easy movie to watch.
That it is not.
The way it's different from Midsommar is that Midsommar is an intellectual assault. Climax is a visceral one.
Sensual one.
Sensual, yes.
As in it assaults the senses.
Yeah. Yeah. Visceral, I think.
Yes, I suppose it does assault the viscera as well.
Yeah. It's much more immediate in its attack on the characters and therefore the audience. The story of a dance troupe in the mid-90s. Partying right before they go off on their final big tour. And somebody has spiked the sangria with some LSD, causing some really bad reactions and some even worse behavior. This movie is not an easy thing to watch. You're going to see people do horrible things to one another. But before that,
And themselves.
But before that, you get an amazing musical dance number.
Yes.
And you get to learn about these characters, and you get to kind of like these characters, and then you get to basically be guided by Virgil through their particular circles of Dante's Inferno.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah.
It's definitely something to see.
It is. It's... perhaps not something to watch alone. You know, this is not a movie to watch alone. You're going to be so depressed after watching it. This is not a cheerful up with people sort of movie, but it is a really well made, very strong bit of work. It's about as
not subtle.
No, not subtle. Blatantly misanthropic and effective.
Yeah. So running down my list one more time, I've got Toy Story 4 checking in at number 5. Number 4 is Avengers Endgame. Number 3 is The Fall of the American Empire. Number 2 is Booksmart. And number 1 is Peter Lou.
And running down my list, we have at number 5, Happy Death Day to You. Number 4 is Avengers Endgame. Number 3 is The Dead Don't Die. Number 2 is Us. And number 1 is Climax.
So listeners, what was your best movie so far of 2019? Let us know. Mail at neonmoviebunker.com.
Yeah. last night had some friends over, recommended Climax to one of them a while back, and they watched it with their wife. And their wife was about 30 minutes in, said, yeah, I'm going to bed. I'm done with it. I can't do this.
No mas. No mas.
Exactly. And, so, yeah, I apologize now for traumatizing anybody who I might have with that recommendation, but it's such a good movie.
Yeah.
So effective.
Yeah.
It nails the landing of what it wants to do so well. It's just that what it wants to do isn't necessarily...
isn't very nice.
Yeah.
In the meantime...
DVDs, Blu-rays, 4K, and streaming continue to be released.
Yes.
And coming up this week on DVD is Styx. You remember the... it was a Robert Redford boating film a couple years back.
Yeah, All is Lost.
All is Lost. Similar in concept. You can... assume from the title about how well things go for the characters involved. It's
when you say Styx, is that as in
STYX?
It is,
yes.
So it is as in the river.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So yeah, I would, it's worth giving a spin.
Okay. My DVD and Blu-ray pick for this week is yeah, there's not a lot coming out.
It's pretty quiet this week.
You know, if you didn't see Dumbo, give that a rental.
Okay. I haven't seen Dumbo yet, so I might rent that, actually.
You can do worse things with your time.
I have done worse things with my time.
I know. I was alongside you for many of them.
Hmm.
Anything for us to avoid this week?
Not really.
Yeah.
Because it's such a quiet week, there's not a whole heck of a lot coming out. There's not a whole heck of a lot that's objectionable about what's coming out, so.
Yeah, that seems fair.
And as my list of my favorites from this year so far might suggest, my ideas of objectionable may not be in line with yours, dear listener. So, you know.
Hey, Larry.
Hey, John.
Let's go to the movies.
Okie dokie. What are we going to go see?
First most of things to see right now is Toy Story 4.
All right. That's fair.
It's a very good movie.
All
fun,
right.
Weird.
Fun, weird, animated. These are all things I like in a film.
Yes. Next on my list of things to see right now, let's go with Avengers Endgame back in theaters.
Yeah. Did it ever really leave?
No, but now with... additional.
6 minutes of added footage.
Yes. And last on my list of things to see right now, if you can find it, and they'll take the test. If you're desperate, and if you can find them, join the AT. No.
No.
No. Find Booksmart.
Okay. If you're going to stay home and pop something into your home video player of choice, be it DVD, Blu-ray, 4K, streaming, whatever. The first thing I'm going to recommend to you is Happy Death Day to You.
Okay.
Like I said, it's a fun, light bit of sci-fi. It plays with convention a bit and is so much fun for it. Follow that up with Us, which is a really well-made thriller that also has quite a bit of interesting material there for you to think about and available on DVD and on Blu-ray. So you can see every single, and 4K, I believe, so you can see every single detail possible, is Climax.
Hmm.
A movie that's guaranteed to make you respond very strongly.
I want to take the opportunity to mention our email address one more time, mail@neonmoviebunker.com. We are available on... Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify. So subscribe there. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/neonmoviebunker. We are on Twitter @neonmoviebunker. I'm @JohnNMB.
I am @LRANeonMB.
And of course, please visit the website www.neonmoviebunker.com for all your Neon Movie Bunker needs. And so we come to the end of another episode of the Neon Movie Bunker. This week's episode is produced by Maggie Stanek. The executive producer is Kate Walpole. The junior executive producer is Maggie Stanek. The theme song is by...
Dr. Awkward, the Monkey Man Trio.
So until next time, I'm John Robinson.
And I'm Larry Stanek.
And we'll probably see you at the movies.